Well, the Bush administration announced last night that the U.S. will soon go to war against terrorism. The media have endlessly pounded on the theme that the U.S. must fight terrorism, attack and destroy terrorist networks, and potentially go to war with nations that harbor or support terrorists. But there's been almost no discussion of just what everyone means when they talk about terrorism. Although Osama bin Laden has become the virtual embodiment of it in the eyes of the U.S. government, in other countries, Colombia, Iraq, East Timor, the occupied territories, the word might include more than that one name. We're joined right now by Noam Chomsky, professor of linguistics at MIT, author of dozens of books and articles on U.S. foreign policy, political ideology, and terrorism. Welcome to Democracy Now in Exile, Noam.
Hi, Amy. How are you?
It's great to have you with us, although on this very difficult occasion. I assume you have read what President Bush said last night about terrorism going after not only individuals, but the countries that harbor and support them. Your response?
He doesn't actually mean what he said, of course. Terrorism has a clear definition. It's clearly defined in the U.S. Code and U.S. Army manuals. It's defined, without going into the details, as the resort to coercion or violence against a civilian population in order to achieve political, religious, or other ends. By that definition, it would be impossible not to accept the statement of the ex-prime minister of Indonesia, Abdurrahman Wahid, that the United States is a terrorist state, in fact, one of the leading terrorist states by that definition, by our own definition. In fact, we even have a name for it. It's called low-intensity warfare, which is a low-intensity conflict, which is actually official military doctrine, and there's plenty of examples of it. So he didn't mean that. What he meant is what's usually meant. We define terrorism, anyone defines terrorism as acts of terrorism that they don't approve of. That's the practical definition everywhere. So he means acts of terrorism that we don't approve of, we will go after by the means that he described. And there's no doubt that the event in question was a horrendous act of terrorism.
One of the things that President Bush said is that if you are not with us, you are with the terrorists.
Yeah, that was already said. We have we're offering the world a stark choice. As the New York Times put it, either you're on our side or you're destroyed. There are precedents for that, too.
Can you talk about what this means for countries like Pakistan and, of course, Afghanistan itself?
Well, it depends what the administration decides to do. I mean, you know, this is, we don't know. And, in fact, there are counter currents, I'm sure. There must be a strong current within the administration that's listening to what they're being told by foreign leaders, by every specialist who knows the region, I'm sure by their own intelligence agencies, that if they decide to undertake a massive assault, which will mostly slaughter innocent victims, in fact, victims of the Taliban. If that's what they decide to do, which is the easy thing, we certainly have the capacity to do that, they will be answering the prayers of bin Laden and his network and falling into what the French foreign minister the other day called a diabolical trap. The reason is pretty clear. It will lead to mobilizing force. It will enable the terrorist networks to mobilize support, appealing to the same kind of reactions that one hears here, natural ones, when there's an atrocity. And that will escalate the cycle of violence in accord with a very familiar dynamic, except in this case at a scale well beyond the usual, leading to enormous crimes elsewhere and very likely much even worse crimes here. That's one possibility. I assume that there are elements in the administration paying attention to that. If not, if they lose, and if there is a massive attack which will kill, you know, mostly Afghans, who, millions of them are barely on the verge of survival, at the edge of survival now. As for Pakistan, with your question, well, nobody really knows, but could very well lead to a Taliban-style revolt in Pakistan, which could win and might spread to the Gulf region, maybe to Saudi Arabia, at which point the quite apart from the horrible fate of the people involved, it will also lead to a threat to the world's to U.S. control of the world's oil supplies, which will never be tolerated. And at this point, we're off into indescribable global war. That's a possibility. I don't predict it, but it's not an outlandish possibility.
We have to break for stations to identify themselves. We'll come back in a minute with Noam Chomsky. In our second hour today, we'll be going to London to speak with journalist John Pilger. Tony Blair has come to the United States and visited Ground Zero yesterday. We'll go to Belgrade and hear from Jeremy Scahill, the response of those who are also under a reign of terror just a year or two ago. And then we're going to speak with students around the country. Yesterday was a national day of student protest. You're listening to Democracy Now! In Exile. Back in a minute. You're listening to Democracy Now! In Exile, Free Speech Radio, as we break the sound barrier, broadcasting just blocks from what used to be the World Trade Center. This is President Bush last night.
And tonight, the United States of America makes the following demands on the Taliban. Deliver to the United States authorities all the leaders of Al-Qaeda who hide in your land. Release all foreign nationals, including American citizens you have unjustly imprisoned. Protect foreign journalists, diplomats, and aid workers in your country. Close immediately and permanently every terrorist training camp in Afghanistan and hand over every terrorist and every person in their support structure to appropriate authorities. Give the United States full access to terrorist training camps so we can make sure they are no longer operating. These demands are not open to negotiation or discussion.
President Bush addressing the nation last night. We're speaking with Professor Noam Chomsky. Noam, you've written extensively about terrorism that the United States government has supported or engaged in. Can you put this in historical context?
Well, perhaps a good way to do it is to take one case which is not controversial, because in fact there's a judgment of the World Court, the highest possible judicial authority, condemning the United States for what it called the unlawful use of force. That's international terrorism. The U.S., of course, this is the case brought by Nicaragua against the United States. The U.S. rejected the judgment, of course, escalated the attack. Nicaragua went to the Security Council, which called on all states to observe international law. The U.S. vetoed it. So there's a World Court and a Security Council declaration demanding that the United States cease its international terrorism, of course, dismissed. Suppose Nicaragua, to put President Bush's comments that you just we just heard in context, let's imagine that Nicaragua had said the same thing and was in a position to do it. Let's say they had Mars behind them or something like that. Suppose that Nicaragua said that given the decision of the World Court, authoritative decision, Security Council resolution, they demanded with no negotiations that the United States hand over at once everyone involved in any way in the international terrorist attack against Nicaragua, which was very serious. Tens of thousands of people killed, the country virtually destroyed. That include, and that they allow Nicaragua to inspect all U.S. military bases anywhere remotely in the region, all support systems, the ideological institutions such as the New York Times, which was drumbeating for the war virtually without exception, and so on. How would we, and that if that didn't happen, the U.S. would be obliterated. That's a that's rather comparable. How would we react? Of course, you know, it's not a credible threat. It's only a credible threat when it's made by a superpower that's not under control. But the cases are not dissimilar, except that the attack on Nicaragua was far worse.
I just read in the news headlines a story from the British newspaper The Guardian about the U.S. plans to press its European allies to agree to a military campaign to topple the Taliban regime and replace it with an interim administration under United Nations auspices. Diplomatic cables from the Washington embassy of a key NATO ally report that the U.S. is keen to hear allied views in a post-Taliban Afghanistan after the liberation of the country. And it says that the U.S. military strategy appears to entail supporting the campaign of the exiled 86-year-old monarch of Afghanistan, King Zahir Shah, to return to power by encouraging the guerrilla army of the Northern Alliance opposition to fall in behind him. Diplomatic documents show that Washington is funding and organizing the travel of several Northern Alliance figures to Rome to confer with the exiled monarch, who's expected to call on all Afghan tribes to rise up in revolution against the Taliban. What is your comment on that?
Well, we have a little historical experience there, too, all over the world, in fact, with regimes that the U.S. has instituted, like the, in Indonesia, Guatemala, all over the place, and total horror, some of the worst horror stories of the 20th century. But just let's take Afghanistan. Where'd the Taliban come from? Where'd the Taliban regime come from? Well, you know, its roots are in operations organized beginning in 1979. By the CIA, French intelligence, Egypt, backing from Israel, Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, to try to organize an army of radical Islamic fundamentalists to carry out a holy war. If we can believe former National Security Advisor Brzezinski, Zbigniew Brzezinski, he takes credit for having as he puts it, drawn the Russians into an Afghan trap, that's his phrase, in 1979, by beginning to send aid to Mujahideen, who were fighting against the government, in the hope that the Russians would intervene and fall into an Afghan trap. That is reminiscent of French Foreign Minister Vidrine's words the other day about the United States falling into a diabolical trap set by bin Laden, and he may have been thinking of it, because French intelligence was, in fact, instrumental in drawing the Russians into the Afghan trap. Incidentally, I say, if we believe Brzezinski, which is a question, he may be bragging, but that's the claim, at least. The CIA and its associates did look for the best killers they could find, naturally, who happened to be radical Islamists, what are called here fundamentalists. They were brutal and murderous. The U.S. armed them, trained them. They carried out terrorist attacks inside Russia with CIA support. And incidentally, they almost immediately turned against their creators. So one of their first acts was to assassinate President Sadat of Egypt, who was the most enthusiastic of the coalition that was forming them. That was 1981. 1983, a single suicide bomber, probably loosely connected to the same network, drove the U.S. military out of Lebanon virtually. It continued. But after the Russians did withdraw from Afghanistan, possibly delayed by these actions, many specialists believe, anyway, did withdraw, and that war was won, they simply turned elsewhere. I mean, since then, they've been carrying out terrorist attacks in against their main enemies, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, other corrupt and repressive governments of the region, which they regard as un-Islamic, and those who support them. And they're fighting in Chechnya, they're fighting in Western China, Kashmir, Bosnia. The roots of Hamas and Gaza and the West Bank go back there too, and they're attacking the United States, which bin Laden himself has he's been very outspoken about this, no big secret. When U.S. forces established a permanent military base in Saudi Arabia, the one from which they're now planning to, or at least saying they're going to bomb Afghanistan, he and his network immediately described that as comparable to the Russian occupation of Afghanistan, although far worse because of Saudi Arabia's significance as the site of the holiest shrines and so on. So then, yes, going to go to war against them, just as the CIA trained them to go to war against the Russian occupiers. So there is a history of U.S. And out of this, the U.S. came the Taliban. I mean, it's a couple of years later, but it sort of grows out of the same networks and background. We already have succeeded, and after the Russians withdrew, the Mujahideen, the various groups that had been formed and created, they just tore the country apart, practically destroyed the place. And one of the reasons why the Taliban, terrible as they are, were more or less welcomed is that they at least calmed the internal battling that was destroying what was left of the country. So we have 20 years of experience in Afghanistan itself of U.S. efforts to establish a regime. Yeah, and it ends up with the Taliban.
Noam, what do you think is the most important thing to understand about Osama bin Laden? And do you think that the U.S. government has the evidence to demand that he be sent out of Afghanistan or to say that he's a prime suspect?
Well, if you ask my opinion, I would assume that Osama bin Laden and his network are responsible for this act. However, the stress should be on the word network. It's a very loosely affiliated, non-hierarchic structure. It's, in a way, it's familiar to the kind of affinity groups we're used to. A non-hierarchic, decentralized structure it immediately develops in resistance situations and others because it's essentially immune to penetration. It's not likely that Osama bin Laden hiding in some cave in Afghanistan was able to literally direct an operation as sophisticated and horrendous as the one that took place on September 11th, but probably goes out of the loose network. I mean, Bush said last night that these are in 60 countries all over the place, and that's right. Much of the world has been asking for evidence. So a couple of days ago, the Arab League said, if you can provide us with some evidence, we will join the attack against this kind of terrorism, which they hate even more than the United States does because they're the main victims of it, targets of it. But the United States can't present the evidence, and it's not likely that they'll be able to. It's going to be hard to find credible evidence about a structure like that in which most of the people directly involved kill themselves, so you can't go after them. Not only the network, but even its financial resources are, informal, limited, spread all over the place. To try to literally destroy the network and all of its supporters would mean destroying, half the world. It's in this sense the call for I mean, NATO, too, has asked for specific for evidence, and they can't get it. But it's a plausible surmise that that's what's behind it. Well, what do you do in such a case? You have two choices. You can just go bomb, kill maybe millions of Afghans, and then answer bin Laden's prayers, escalate the cycle of violence. Yeah, you can do that. The alternative is to pursue, is to follow the statement of the U.S. bishops that was announced yesterday. Follow national and international law. That means pursue the series of steps that, for example, Nicaragua pursued. I mean, I presume they had the capacity to set off bombs in Washington, even if not to bomb the United States. They didn't. They went to the World Court, received the decision in their favor, went to the Security Council. U.S. blocked it, went to the General Assembly several times, a unanimous vote that the U.S. should stop its attack. U.S. and Israel opposed. And then they couldn't do anything more. But nobody's going to stop the United States if it follows the proper principles of national and international law. I mean, let's take a domestic example. Just no two cases are similar, but tells you something. Let's take the bombing of the federal building in Oklahoma City. The initial calls, as I'm sure you remember, were let's bomb the Middle East. Okay, you know, kill the bastards. It was, and if there had been any link, however minimal, to the Middle East, that's probably what would have happened. When it was found to have its roots in the U.S. militia movement, those calls stopped. Nobody called for bombing Montana and Idaho to root out the whole militia movement. They went after the perpetrator, tried to discover the perpetrator, they found him, brought him to the courts. And then comes the next step, if you're serious, why did it happen? You look into the roots of the militia movement. And the fact of the matter is, we should be honest enough to face this, that when almost every crime you can think of, whether it's a robbery in the streets or a colossal atrocity, there are some reasons behind it. And if you're serious, if you want to reduce the threat of further crimes rather than enhance them, what you do is look into the reasons. And you almost invariably find that some among those reasons, whether it's Oklahoma City or World Trade Center or a crime in the streets, some of them are serious, and they ought to be addressed. And again, you have a choice. If you want to reduce the threat of violence, you think about those things. If you want to escalate the threat of violence against yourself as well, then you disregard it and just lash out violently. Those are almost always the choices. In the case of Oklahoma City, the proper response after following the right criminal procedures was to look into the reasons and ask where this is coming from and try to, and insofar as they're authentic, and to some extent they are, alleviate them.
Well, Noam Chomsky, I want to thank you very much for being with us. As usual, it's not enough time, but thank you for the beginning. Noam Chomsky, Professor of Linguistics at Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and that does it for today's program. Democracy Now! In Exile is produced by Chris Abrams, Brad Simpson, Miranda Kennedy. Anthony Sloan is our music maestro and engineer. Errol Maitland is at the helm at WBIX.org with Reem. Karen Renucci, Adrian Yenick, Rick Younger, Zoe No, Jeff Galusha, Lyle Danier, Dee Dee Halleck, John Alpert, Keiko Suno, Tony Riddle, Chase Pearson, Lenny Charles. Thanks all for helping us out. Democracy Now! Broadcasting from DC TV, Engine House 31. From In Exile from the embattled studios of WBAI. Yes, folks, we are Pacifica. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening to another edition of Ground Zero Radio.